Har begrepet kall noe med karriereveiledning å gjøre? Hva det som bidrar til å skape et kall I et individ? Hvilken betydning har et opplevd kall for følelsen av mening I karrierevalg? Hei og velkommen til Veilederforum-podden, en podcast fra Direktoratet for høyere utdanning og kompetanse. Mitt navn Mari Torbjørnsrud, og jeg en av fagredaktørene for veilederforum.no, et nettsted for deg som veileder om utdanning, jobb og karriere. I artiklen «Arbeid, kall og karriereveiledning» fra 2018 stilte Roger Kjærgaard spørsmålet «Hvilken sammenheng kan det være mellom det moderne arbeidslivet, en moderne kallsforståelse og karriereveiledning som fokuserer på mening, hensikt og identitet?» Mening et sentralt begrep I karriereveiledning, og Kjærgaard med flere argumenterer for at en moderne forståelse av kall kan være relevant I den forbindelse I karriereveiledningssammenheng. I dagens episode av Veilederforum-podden skal vi snakke med Dr. Jill Frigerio, som har forsket på kall I karriereveiledning. Jill leder studiet innen karrierecoaching ved University of Warwick, og styreleder for NYSEC, National Institute for Career Education and Counseling. Jill har en omfattende bakgrunn innen karriereveiledning. Hun underviser og forsker på karrierecoaching, og spesielt interessert I kall teori og praksis innen karrierecoaching, kvinners karriereutvikling, arbeid med marginaliserte miljøer, og å støtte karriereveiledere med forskningsinteressene deres.
Welcome, Jill. I would like to start with the concept of calling or kall in Norwegian. I think kall in Norwegian by many will have some religious aspects to it, but it can also be understood in a secular meaning. In English, you use both calling and vocation. Does it have the same meaning or is it slightly different?
Thank you. That's a good question. And yes, that's true. We do have both those terms in popular use. And they're probably used somewhat differently in kind of everyday language. People might say, I found my calling if they discover that they're good at something they'd never tried before. And vocation's got a slightly more formal ring to it. And of course, it also means pertaining to work, as we have vocational courses that are linked to professions or vocational qualifications and even vocational guidance as a name for our work. But the truth is really that they're largely the same. It's just that they come from different places. English, as you might know, is a mishmash language with lots of different influences, which is why we have lots of words for the same thing. And calling comes from the Scandinavian and German influence, and vocation comes from the Latin influence, from the Latin vocare, which of course means voice. Or is the root of voice as well. And that's quite interesting, I think.
Yeah, indeed. How would you define calling in this context?
Well, there are various definitions around in the literature. Some focus a lot on that internal process of experiencing a sense of call, something that you believe will give your life meaning and purpose. It could be anything. Others layer onto that what we might call a pro-social dimension, that there must be a wider benefit. And finally, some add onto that, that there must be an element that comes from beyond the person. I really like the way that Roger Kjærgaard has put it. He said, an individual could perceive an external summons to be a medical doctor because it's what God wills, because it's what Norway needs, or because it's their family's destiny to be medics. Of course, if you're going to work with the concept in practice, you might want to start with what does the person or the people that you're working with think it is? And they might not actually be sure, but encouraging them to think about that is a start.
That sounds like a good place to start. But what made you interested in looking at calling from a perspective of career guidance?
Well, I've always been interested in the study of religion and how religions influence society and how that's changed over time. So I guess when I found the term being used so much in the careers literature, I was intrigued, I was curious, and a little bit irritated, to be honest, because I found that scholars that were writing about it were so far removed from practice that they were suggesting that it didn't matter where the calling came from in terms of how you work with it. and they were seeking to remove that religious component as if it was inappropriate to bring it into a practice like ours. Also, I was aware that the impetus came from the USA with its highly individualistic culture and its way of seeing itself as a meritocracy. And I felt that for a client that did have a religious faith, it was not appropriate to deny the significance of that. And I felt that context was important in how we work with any concepts, really. I guess my own spirituality has informed how I see career decision making as having a component from the divine, or whatever you call it, from beyond me. So that was probably part of my motivation as well.
We have had a podcast episode about meaning, and I was wondering, what are the links between calling and meaning within the context of career guidance?
I think the most obvious sense is in career decision making, both at the large scale of which direction to go in terms of work, but also within a working life, which projects you might want to pick up, how to be at work, when it might be time to move on from one particular job. I think it's probably wider than that too, though. It connects to motivation and to performance and to resilience to external factors. But it also has a dark side, which I guess we'll probably come on to. So I think we can use it in lots of ways to help people to reflect on their story and think about the story they want to write about their future.
You said that calling is a topic that pops up in career guidance literature, but do you find that most career guidance practitioners address it or think about it in their day-to-day practice?
I have been leading a module at Warwick called Career, Vocation and Calling for some years now, and we have students who are training to be practitioners, but also we have quite a lot of practitioners who come back and study with us part-time to top up to a master's level qualification. And I find that quite a few are intrigued by that module, and we do get students who say that that's what's attracted them to us. So people might not have thought about it in a lot of detail and got a really clear handle on how it informs their practice, but there's certainly an area of interest that it seems to speak to. And I love working with practitioners in different contexts and hearing how the ideas in the module connect to their practice.
Yeah. In what ways can a person experience a calling?
Well, I think it can relate to how they might perceive or discern a calling, but also in terms of the process of living out a calling. So from the perceiving end of things, well, not many of us hear an actual voice or see, you know, writing in the sky or something to tell us what to do. But we might tap into and amplify personal stirrings or yearnings as we reflect on ourselves and our place in the world. And legitimizing those, I think, is important as something real that might be useful in decision making. And we might also pay attention to the messages that we get from others. Are we nudged by coincidences or surprised by comments that other people make about us that we didn't expect? We have to reflect, of course, on where those people might be coming from. In terms of living a calling, it can be about being open to new possibilities, about being proactive and reflective about your place in the world, I guess.
What are the forces shaping a person's sense of calling?
Well, context, of course, is going to have a huge impact on how someone will perceive and express their calling. So, for example, in cultures where filial piety is highly valued, the sense of continuing your family's calling will, you know, perhaps be dominant. And in others, duty might feature very prominently, or commitments to a collective, to a community. And in more individualistic cultures, we might talk about personal fulfillment. In fact, I think probably internal and external factors are working together to shape us in different ways.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, Roger Kjærgaard's three different kinds of calling, and that one is from God, and one is from family, and one is from society, what society needs. Do you think some of those are more prominent than others in Western culture?
Well, I guess people may or may not have a faith. Mm. If they do have a faith, how they see that is possibly shaped by their religious formation and their social context. So I think they're actually, it's quite hard to separate the three out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in a Western culture, there are mostly more individualistic tendencies. And in some ways, a sense of calling can be at odds with that.
Well, I think there's some literature that tries, that sort of teases out different ways in which people might see calling, and refers to a sort of a neoclassical interpretation of calling, which is very much about duty and about your station in life and where you've been placed working there to do good. And there are others that are sometimes are described as more contemporary. Perhaps we could just say that they're more individualistic, which are about self-actualization and becoming the best you can be, you know, that sort of focus. And as I'm saying, I think possibly there's a bit of both of those things going on for most of us.
Yeah. Do you think calling is something everybody experiences, perhaps without acknowledging it as such? Do you think people always know if they have a calling?
I think sometimes people can feel quite distressed about the idea of not having a calling in terms of a sense of a type of work that they can do. And other people could feel, well, who am I to be called? So it does connect a little bit with self-esteem and self-concept. You know, you might think the universe doesn't call me because I have nothing to offer. I think it's helpful to kind of reframe that by dialing out and thinking less about what you're called to do and more about how you're called to be, and how you're called to be might be something that you can think about in all contexts, in your family, in your friendships, in your community, as well as in any workplace that you have. So, for example, you might be someone who notices what other people need. Like, I always notice there's a woman called Mandy who works at my local supermarket checkout, and she's got a really nice way of engaging older customers in conversation. You know, perhaps people who are lonely, and I've seen people gravitate to her checkout, you know, not doing the self-checkout thing, because they, you know, they want to chat. And so that's, you know, that's how Mandy is at work. She's, you know, you might be someone who makes other people laugh, or someone who asks hard questions that no one else wants to ask. So, or you might be the person that always goes home on time because you're called to other life roles and you want to you model that to other people as well. So it might take some doing, but we can usually find something that relates to the essence of you.
Yeah. Do you think a sense of calling is more prominent within some lines of work than others?
Yes, and that's interesting. Going back to Mandy, I shouldn't think she, I don't know, I've never asked her, but maybe she doesn't think she's called to be a supermarket checkout operative. And so it is perhaps more associated with higher status work and work that has required a huge amount of personal commitment and endeavour to get there, because the calling is something that is part of what fuels the individual to be motivated to pursue a highly competitive or inaccessible professional area. So that could be something like the arts, the creative industries, or something high status like medicine, or something that's very hard to get into like academia, for example.
Do you think the concept of calling is tied to Christian theology, or in broader terms, a Western mindset?
That's interesting, isn't it? Especially if we think about the origins of Christianity and its relation to the West. Anyway, it certainly has a strong Christian legacy, and that in turn has massively influenced Western civilization, of course. And we know that Western civilization has suffered from some exceptionalism and the urge to colonize. So we do need to be mindful of that when we're sort of exporting this concept. But another dimension of that that I think is interesting is when we're working with people who have migration in their family background. As they often remind the white majority in a population, you know, we're here because you were there. We took Western ideology to their lands and it was influential there. And that in turn has shaped the cultural perspectives that they've brought back into the UK. So in the UK, religiosity is often the highest amongst African and Caribbean Christians and amongst South Asian Sikhs and Hindus and Muslims, for example. So we do need the religious literacy amongst guidance practitioners to have discussions about faith with people who are different from ourselves. But maybe that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, maybe. But I think it's very interesting because I would think that a lot of practitioners maybe tend to not address a person's religious beliefs in a guidance session.
Yes, and of course, we're going to have colleagues who come from those backgrounds themselves, and that's really, really important that we diversify the profession. And that's something that we have a few issues with in the UK. It is a predominantly white, middle class and female profession. So that's why I sort of talk about religious literacy, because people might feel uncomfortable that they don't know enough about a different religious perspective to open up that conversation, and being aware that religion is a protected characteristic and how religious belief might be operating for somebody as part of their cultural identity, that there might be some hesitancy to kind of open that door. But I have to say, when I've talked at conferences and stuff about calling, it's often the few black and brown people in the audience who thank me for bringing religion into the space. So I think it's really important that we try to work through that and get comfortable enough to be able to have a conversation about religion and faith and belief with people. And we're reflecting on our own stories and how that shaped how we feel about opening that door.
Yeah, and I would think that there's a difference between addressing a religious belief in the context of calling or meaning and what you want to do with your career or your life, and addressing religious beliefs in the sense that maybe there are some hindrances for what you can do because you have those beliefs, or talking about it in more in terms of it being a problem.
Yeah, in for sure. Sense. It can help us get away from that deficit model. Yeah, and identify religion and belief as an asset and a positive source that we can use to help people with their career development. That's very true.
Yeah. Do you think a sense of calling always is a good thing?
Oh, great question. And that's been a really interesting development in the literature, actually. First of all, some of the literature comes from that kind of organizational behavior field. And it's very focused on the needs of the organisation more than the needs of the individual. And there's plenty of data to show that individuals who can align their work with a calling are better employees. They're more productive, they're more motivated, they're more satisfied. For example, it is associated with well-being. But there is a dark side. When I'm talking about this, I usually illustrate my slide with a picture of Yoda from Star Wars because, you know, he talks about the dark side. People with a calling are more susceptible to exploitation, to working for low pay or in poor conditions, to overwork, to neglecting their overall well-being, to burnout. So in a way, maybe it's no wonder that employers, you know, it plays to their benefit. Although long term, burnt out employees aren't good for an organization, are they? And when working conditions change or they become intolerable, needing to walk away can be a real blow to identity for people with a strong sense of calling. And that means for us in guidance practice, we're dealing with grief and loss.
Yeah. I think what you were addressing now, it also ties in with the UN sustainability goal of decent work.
Yes, for sure. And of course, we also need to bear in mind the shortage of decent work across the globe, where many are struggling with extreme poverty and don't have access to decent work. You know, maybe thinking about calling can come off as a bit of a self-obsessed indulgence. So we need to be mindful of that too.
Of course. Career guidance started out with a focus on matching, but has since evolved, and the focus is now on supporting people's lifelong career learning and the development of competences. How does calling fit into that?
I think the scholarship of calling has gone on a similar journey, actually, from focusing on finding one big lifelong calling to a more nuanced position about ongoing discernment and sense making of your calling as you and your work and your context and your needs change. And the competences to engage in job crafting towards a calling are really important. Just to say a bit more about job crafting, it's a set of ideas about aligning whatever work you do with a sense of calling, either by tweaking the tasks that you do, if you have the scope to do that, or focusing on the relational side of work, or reframing how you think about work. So it's quite a compelling set of ideas, especially if, like me, you kind of appeal to anything with craft in the name. But it does need to be critiqued too. The most famous examples that are given quite often are about hospital cleaners who reframe their job as contributing to healing. And of course, they do. You know, people don't get on very well in a hospital without hygienic conditions. But, you know, the hospital cleaners are still paid a lot less than the doctors, and they're often on pretty difficult terms and conditions as well. So I think we need to balance that job crafting focus with also developing a critical consciousness and the other ideas that we have in our field about incorporating social justice to our work.
Do you see a calling as something fixed, or do you think a sense of calling can change or develop throughout a person's career?
I think it will change and develop because I think it's not just an objective thing that's existing beyond you. I think it's existing within you, and you will change over time. And, you know, what somebody needs from work at different life stages. And of course, people have callings that aren't related to their work, you know, callings to be engaged in their community, to family life, that, and those things are going to need to be taken into account as well along the way.
But what if a person has a sense of calling but doesn't have the right skill set to fulfill that?
Yes, that is quite often discussed and raised as a that's where I think that idea of dialing out might come back to be useful to us. So it might be, let's take the example of someone who wants to be a doctor but isn't projected to get the grades to get into medical school, or indeed might not be able to take on the level of debt, for example, in the UK, that doing a medical degree would involve. So I think if we're working with that person, then there's a process to go through of working out whether what the barriers to getting those grades are. But if it's really not going to happen, then helping the person to think about, well, what is it about medicine that attracts you? Is it, you know, because your family want you to have a high status profession? Or is it about healing, or is it about science, or is it about kind of public health motivation? And think about, well, what other ways of pursuing those commitments there might be for you, unpicking it a little bit and reframing it.
Yeah, you mentioned if your family wants you to do a medical degree, but do you see it as true calling if it comes from society or family, and it becomes more a pressure?
Mm. Well, I think it's really important actually to take seriously what people report as family expectations, and it would be inappropriate to dismiss that. And actually, you know, wanting to make your family proud, it might be a really good thing to want to do. So I wouldn't want to dismiss it in any way. I think it does need to be honoured, but also understood that the person that you're working with is able to think, yeah, that's why I'm doing A and not B. It's because of the family motivation. And if they do want to push back on it, or they're feeling a lot of conflict because they can't achieve it, then let's help them think about how they might do that. What we might even want to work with families, if that's appropriate, or we might help people think about those family relationships and how they navigate that space and how they have those conversations.
Yeah, I was thinking a bit about what we talked about earlier, about individualistic culture and more Eastern culture, or where the society and family are more in center.
Mm.
And I think that will affect how a person's sense of calling is perceived, both within themselves and by a practitioner.
That's true. And also, you know, if going back to this migration point, you know, if previous generations have made massive sacrifices, then that might be another reason to honour that and pay that back. And, you know, I wouldn't want to it be in any way denigrating that motivation. But let's have the conversation about it. Let's acknowledge it's there.
Yeah. How can career guidance practitioners address the concept of calling within their practice?
Well, I think we do it in lots of ways. We help people work out what's personally meaningful for them and what's influencing them. I think clients often think that we're advocating an individualistic and rational decision-making style. And that relates to what I was just saying earlier about acknowledging other influences as being okay. You know, there's no problem with that. By introducing the idea of calling, which is often associated with the unconscious or the spiritual, we can make it okay for a client to articulate that as well. We can ask them about their values. We can ask them about their gifts. We can even ask them about what they believe in. And I think for some clients who are turned off by the idea of a career mindset, it can actually be a way of engaging with them. And that's something that I certainly found in my own research, that I did a study which interviewed a number of mid-career women, and quite a few of them talked about explicitly rejecting what was on offer in the career service when they were at university because they didn't think it was for people like them, but they had senses of calling that they'd followed.
Would you say that the concept of calling is mostly a perspective guidance practitioners should be aware of, or that it's something they should actively address in conversations with clients?
Well, I think we should be led by our clients, of course, but we can infuse our practice with calling. We can build it into that initial alliance that we build with our clients, and we can give them a language to talk about it, if you like. We can be mindful of those well-being implications that I talked about and the long-term sustainability of anything that people feel called to do. Different contexts might encourage us to build it in different ways. So, for example, in the UK, we have faith schools. And if you're working in a faith school, then you might integrate your work with that in a particular way, for example, or in a community setting, that might also be true. And then the last thing I'd say is that I think we can also think about our own callings in our careers and continuing to reflect on that and kind of take our own medicine, if you like, as we develop our own journeys through work.
Thank you so much, Jill. This has been very interesting.
Thank you.
Hvis du er nysgjerrig og vil lese mer om Jills arbeid, så anbefaler jeg artiklen «Karriereveilederens plass i veiledningen» på veilederforum.no, som Jill skrev i 2023. For å være litt personlig avslutningsvis, Jeg har aldri tenkt at jeg har et kall, eller reflektert over det som et begrep som har betydning i mitt liv og min karriere. Men samtidig så ser jeg at de store valgene som jeg har tatt i karrieren min, studieretning, hvor jeg jobber og så videre, handler om det som er riktig å gjøre, og om det som er viktig, både for meg og for samfunnet. Det vil si om det jeg jobber med spiller en rolle i det store bildet. Jeg synes dette er veldig spennende refleksjoner, og jeg håper at dere som hører på også vil reflektere over dette, både i egen karriere, egen praksis og i møte med veisøkere. Takk for i dag.